Noted, he said to Fuchs. That same ship earlier attacked Mr. Ambrose's ship, Walsing Matilda, and left him and his crewmen for dead.
Do you have any evidence for this, other than your unsupported word?
Wilcox asked. Walsing Matilda is drifting in the belt. We can provide approximate coordinates for our search, if you wish to undertake it. Wilcox shook his head. I doubt that such a search will be necessary. Earlier, Fuchs resumed, several other vessels were attacked. The Lady of the Lake, Aswan, the Star. Fervord called from her chair.
There is no evidence that any of those ships were attacked.
They disappeared without a trace, Fuchs snapped. The signals cut off abruptly.
With a smile, Fervord said, That is not evidence that they were attacked.
Quite so, said Wilcox.
In most of those cases, the asteroids that those ships claimed were later claimed by Humphrey's space systems, Fuchs pointed out.
What of it?
Fervord retorted.
HSS ships have laid claim to many hundreds of asteroids. And if you examine the record carefully, you will see that four of the six asteroids in question have been claimed by entities other than HSS.
Wilcox turned toward the lean assistant on his left. The man nodded hastily and said,
Three of them were claimed by a corporation called Bandung Associates, and the fourth by the Church of the Written Word. None of these entities are associated with HSS. I checked thoroughly.
So what this hearing boils down to, Wilcox said, turning back to Fuchs, is your assertion that you were attacked.
For that, I have evidence. And you have seen it, Fuchs said, boiling inside.
Yes, yes, said Wilcox. There's no doubt that you were attacked. But attacked by whom? That's the real question.
By a ship working for HSS, Fuchs said, feeling he was pointing out the obvious. Under the orders of Martin Humphreys.
Can you prove that?
No employee of HSS would take such a step without the personal approval of Humphreys himself, Fuchs insisted. He even had one of my people killed, murdered, in cold blood.
You are referring to the murder of Niles Ripley, are you not?
Asked Wilcox.
Yes. A deliberate murder to stop our construction of the habitats we're building.
Fervord interrupted.
We concede that Mr. Ripley was killed by an employee of Humphrey's Space Systems, but it was a private matter. The killing was neither ordered nor condoned by HSS, and Mr. Fuchs personally dispatched the killer in a violent act of vigilantism.
Wilcox fixed Fuchs with a stern gaze.
Frontier justice, eh? It's too bad that you executed him. His testimony might have supported your case.
Feeling exasperated, Fuchs said,
Who else would benefit from all these criminal acts?
With a wry smile, Wilcox said,
I was hoping you could tell me, Mr. Fuchs. That's why we've gone to the expense and trouble of holding this hearing. Who is responsible here?
Fuchs closed his eyes briefly.
I don't want to bring Amanda into this. I don't want to make this seem like a personal feud between Humphreys and me.
Do you have anything else to offer, Mr. Fuchs?
Before he could reply, George got to his feet again and said very calmly,
Everybody on Ceres knows that Humphreys is trying to squeeze Fuchs out of the belt. Ask anybody.
Mr.
Wilcox glanced down at his computer screen.
Ambrose, is it? Mr. Ambrose, what everybody knows is not evidence in a court of law, nor in this hearing.
George sat down, mumbling to himself.
The fact is, Fuchs said, struggling to keep from screaming, that someone is killing people. Someone is attacking Prospector ships. Someone is committing terrible crimes in the asteroid belt. The IAA must take action, must protect us.
He stopped. He realized he was begging, almost whining. Wilcox leaned back in his chair.
Mr. Fuchs, I quite agree that your frontier is a violent, lawless place. But the International Astronautical Authority has neither the power nor the legal authority to serve as a police force across the asteroid belt. It is up to the citizens of the belt themselves to provide their own protection, to police themselves.
We are being systematically attacked by Humphrey's Space Systems personnel, Fuchs insisted.
You are being attacked, I grant you. Wilcox responded with a sad, condescending smile. most likely by renegades from among your own rough-and-ready population. I see no evidence linking Humphrey's space systems to your problems in any way, shape, or manner.
You don't want to see, Fuchs raged.
Wilcox stared at him coldly.
This hearing is concluded, he said.
But you haven't.
It's finished, Wilcox snapped.
He stood up, grabbed his computer, clicked its lid shut, and tucked it into his jacket pocket. Then he turned and strode out of the room, leaving Fuchs standing there, frustrated and furious.
Straining to keep a satisfied smile off her face, Diane Fairford led the squad of Humphrey's employees out of the hearing room, leaving Fuchs and his two friends standing there in helpless, confused frustration. Out in the corridor, she made polite small talk with Douglas Stavanger and Pancho Lane as they left, looking disappointed at the outcome of the hearing. Fairford knew that Pancho was Humphreys's chief opponent on the board of Astro Corporation, and that Humphreys would not be satisfied until he had full control of Astro. Which means, she told herself, that once we've finally gotten rid of Fuchs, Pancho is next. She hurried to the power stairs that led down to her office. Once there, alone, she put through a tight-beam laser call to Doric Harbin. He should be arriving at Ceres in another hour or so, she knew. It took nearly 20 minutes before his face appeared on her wall screen, smolderingly handsome without the beard, his chin firm and hard, his eyes icy blue, intent. I know you can't reply to this before you land, she said to Harbin's image, but I wanted to wish you good luck and tell you that, well, I'm counting the minutes until you get back here to me. She took a deliberate breath, then added, I've made arrangements with the HSS people at Ceres. The drugs you need will be there, waiting for you. Fairford cut the connection. The screen went dark. Only then did she smile. Keep him personally bound to you, she told herself. Use his weaknesses. Use his strengths. He's going to be very valuable, especially if you ever have to protect yourself from Martin. She turned and studied her reflection in the mirror on the far wall of her office. Delilah, she said to herself, and laughed.
So what do we do now?
George asked as he, Fuchs, and Noden made their way down the power stairs. Fuchs shook his head miserably.
I don't know. This hearing was a farce. The IAA has given Humphreys a free hand to do whatever he wants.
Looks that way, George agreed, scratching at his beard. Noden said nothing.
Amanda, Fuchs said, I must tell her what's happened. I must tell her that I failed.
Harbin looked over the 8 men that had been assigned to his command. A ragtag bunch at best. Roughnecks, hoodlums, petty thugs. Not one of them had a scrap of combat training or true military discipline. But then, he remembered, this isn't really a military operation. It's a simple theft. Nothing more. He had spent the high-G flight from Cellini studying the plan and background information Diane had given him. But he had expected reliable men to work under him, not a gaggle of hooligans. Steeling himself to his task, Harbin silently repeated the mantra that the workman does not blame his tools, and the warrior must fight with what he has at hand. The first task is to instill these morons with some purpose other than cracking skulls and making money. Harbin assumed that none of the louts assigned to him gave a damn about what had happened to the hot-headed Tracy Buchanan, but the doctrine that his old sergeant had drilled into him asserted that it was beneficial to a unit's cohesion and teamwork to build group solidarity in any way possible. So he said to them, You remember what that man Fuchs did to Trace Buchanan? It was purely a rhetorical question. They nodded unenthusiastically. Buchanan had been a bully and a fool. He did not have friends, only associates who were afraid to make him angry. None of them mourned the late Mr. Buchanan. But Harbin felt he had to whip up some enthusiasm among his 8 underlings. He had brought them together in the cramped little office at the HSS warehouse, 8 men who had been flown to Ceres specifically because they could follow orders.